Tarry here, where the stories never grow old, and you hear something new every time they are told and it comes clear. So tarry here, where it doesn't matter your age, and when we gather round the table, we all take the stage year after year. So tarry here.
Welcome to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour at enlightenedradio.org. This is your storytelling host, Fanny Crawford.
And Stasi Okowski.
Today is April 27th. It's Monday at 12 noon, so you must be listening to the Enlightened Radio Storytelling Hour. You were just listening to Andy Offit Irwin, opening our show with his original composition, Tarry Here. Thank you so much, Andy. Following you a little bit on virtual storytelling, and Andy is a great storyteller, so that's always fun. How are you, Stash?
I'm doing fine. I'm getting lots of rest, and I'm getting some work done. I'm working on
storytelling. You've been telling stories online.
I have been. Two best stories I worked on have been with my grandson and my daughter using the Zoom business, and it was fun. I was able to do a very, very tricky science and math thing with my grandson, and it worked. And it was something I used to do in the chemistry lab, and it was like it's kind of like a magic trick. But it's based on science and math, and it worked so well that I'm thinking about trying to figure out a way to do it this summer. If I can get my hands on a good high school balance, or even less than that, a balance where I can measure things of small weights, less than 50 grams. All the way down to that. Anyway, it's one of those things that I like doing, because the first time a person sees it done, until they understand the math, it is mind-boggling. It's like a real magic thing. how many pennies of different kinds are in a sealed box that I can't see, especially over the Zoom thing, over the internet. Usually I've done it always when I'm in the classroom, and then it's my classroom, my stuff, but with someone else doing all the work in their home and me just providing answers, it is pretty magical. It's pretty neat. I've been collecting more bottles. I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 bottles with balloons in them. Of different kinds, different colored balloons.
You are possibly
bottles.
You're possibly unique in the universe.
I might be, and I keep finding different kind of bottles. They show up in front of me, and it's easy. My wife is so nice. I'll say, "Would you save that for me?" And she knows I'm on it. So in my office, which you know what it looks like, there are 7 bottles sitting up next to my coyote puppet.
An apt resting place.
Yes. Shall I tell you a little bit about storytelling?
Please do.
Saturday.
Yeah.
Okay. And
I'm so sorry I could not be there. I thought about you throughout.
I know it's a number. It's one of those things where I have had a number of people apologize because I sent out a poster, and so people would know. And it was easy to do. All you had to do was have the Zoom app, and you didn't have to pay anything. But to give people time, it's like saying, I'm going to be on television at 3 o'clock on Sunday. And, people, good intentions. But some people did show up. The West Virginia Guild, we had a rehearsal last Monday that was brutal. It was kind of tedious, but we stuck to it. And then on Saturday, we had about 30 people attend the concert.
Wow, that's great.
People from far away, a number of people from Pittsburgh. One of the tellers was from Pittsburgh and doing it in her home. And Kate McConnell from Pittsburgh was there. Mike Perry, a number of people tuned in. Mark from Hagerstown, and there were people I didn't even know that were mentioned after this thing. Anyway, the stories were good. People liked them, and it worked well. And we're going to do it. We're going to do another one. We haven't decided. They haven't decided what the date will be, but that'll be good. Also, that was fun. And also, I have an update about Speak.
Oh, okay.
We are going to have a performance in May via the internet. And I'm sure I think Adam is going to be using Zoom to do it. But Kevin Kling will be here, and he will be performing. And Adam is working on it. He's already sent out information. people can pay by check or to attend it on their computer or iPad, and the people who have season tickets, and I believe we've sold close to 60 season tickets.
That would be me.
Yeah, you will get a notification that all you have to do is join the meeting and you'll be there. And I think Adam's excited about it. It's going to be a way of keeping the series going now, and we'll see how it works. Hopefully, it'll be a good experience for everybody.
Was Kevin the originally scheduled May performer?
Yes.
Excellent.
Yes. So that's really great that we can still get him. The Ruckers, who were scheduled in April, are going to be coming back sometime next year, probably.
Mm-hmm.
And and they're happy with what Adam has arranged for them, because they were supposed to do a 3-day thing here. So that's been settled, and we're moving on.
It's lovely. That's so good to hear. It's inspiring, really.
Mm.
I've been doing lots of Zoom meetings and a little bit of storytelling on Zoom. But it's different, and I can understand why some tellers are reluctant, but I would like to do more. So that's really good news.
Yes. And is there any news from Stories in the Realm?
Well, what I really need to make a virtual opening and to start of a virtual series is somebody to manage the technology for me, because I can't do that and be present as the host as well as the story host. There's the technical host and the story host.
You have a technical wizard in your house.
He does not necessarily agree with that personification.
Well, so it doesn't matter. That's what I think.
Josh says.
Right. Oh, yeah, use that.
Yeah.
that always makes people relax and do what I want them to do.
Yes.
Okay. So I think maybe we should get started with the show.
Oh, yeah. Well, the theme of the show, as I understand it, is interviews.
Right.
And you have a story about interviews.
I have a story about an interview. And then we're going to have a special guest.
So I understand.
Yes.
I've actually been in communication with our special guest. And
good.
He's on standby.
All right. And I'm looking forward to interviewing him.
I think he's really excited about it.
So shall I tell a story?
Please do.
Okay. And hopefully I'm not making any extraneous noises this time. I practice being good. So I had a 40-year teaching career. And for the first 24 years, I taught mainly at one public school. But at the end of my 22nd year of teaching, I made a decision to leave that school and to quit coaching. I retired from coaching and I transferred to another public school. That school turned out to be less than perfect for me. I liked the students in my classroom. I wasn't happy with the situation. So at the end of my 24th year, I just happened into a situation where I found out that a private school in Baltimore, Maryland, they had a science teacher, a person who did science from first through sixth grade, and she was leaving. And a friend at the school contacted me and said, I think you should apply for this job. And I had no interest at going to a private school at the time, no thought in my brain about it. But I spent the day thinking about it, and I thought, wow, that would be exciting. I've been thinking about maybe applying, transferring again to a different school. And I thought, wow, what a chance to work with elementary kids and to be the science teacher, first through sixth grade, even though I was terrified about that prospect since I had never taught young children except my own. And so I actually applied, and I was given an interview. On the day of the interview, I showed up. And of course, this was a very nice school, very expensive, and I put on my best clothes, coat and tie, everything. And I went to the interview, and I hate interviews. Interviews to me are always a guessing game. You try to guess to say the right thing so that the interviewer will be happy with you and will be impressed with you. And that's one of those things that always bothered me. So I met the headmaster of the school, and that was a whole new thing in my life. I'd never talked to anybody who was a headmaster, and so we sat in his office, and he asked a few questions, and just probably 5 minutes into the interview, I said, I need to tell you something. And he said, what's that? He was a very nice person. I wound up working for him. I said, I hate interviews. It's always a kind of game. Am I saying the right thing? Did he not smile at that? Is she wondering why I wore this tie? And, back and forth. And I said, I just don't like interviews because I have a hard time concentrating on just being me. And he said, well, I'll tell you what, let's take a walk. I'll show you the school. And which I thought was brilliant because it got both of us out of our chairs. And so we walked side by side through the school. And he pointed out some things, and he had a really nice way of asking questions or provoking responses. And provoking is a little bit strange word, but getting me to talk about myself and my education and my experience. During that interview, which lasted for 90 minutes. Originally, he had said it wouldn't be more than 15 minutes or so. he just needed to learn some stuff about me. But we talked and had a good time, and he even let me know that the job also encompassed becoming the director of a planetarium in the basement of the school, which I didn't know. And that seemed exciting too, because I had taught some astronomy. I loved the night sky and studying about the planets. And so the interview ended, we shook hands, and he said, you'll be hearing from us. And I left. And I was really pumped. I thought, wow, that was great. You know, what? And I even thought to myself, I think I'd enjoy working for him. It was smart. He got us up out of the chairs so that we could just kind of roam the school, and I learned stuff. Well, a couple of days went by, and I didn't hear anything. A week went by, I didn't hear anything. 2 weeks went by, didn't hear anything. Finally, I got a call from my friend who worked at the school, she said, I'm glad you're going to be teaching here. I said, well, you must know something I don't know, because I haven't gotten a call or anything about it. And she said, you're kidding. I said, no. And she said, the headmaster has announced it. I said, well, I said, I don't know what to say. And she said, stay by your phone. She hung up. Apparently, she called the headmaster. She worked in the lower part of the school building in an office. She was in charge of the homeschool program. Anyway, 2 minutes later, I get a phone call with a great apology and lots of laughter between Mr. Hall and myself, the headmaster, who said, I made up my mind to hire you before you got to your car. I knew, and I was so excited, I, you know, wrote it right down on my pad where I keep notes at my desk. This guy is going to be fun. Okay. Well, he said, somehow I convinced myself that I did that. And he says, so will you take the job? And I said, of course I will. And he said, that's good, because I've already announced it to our faculty. And and a bonus was that he was going to put me on salary beginning with the day the public schools ended, so I could wrap up my public school work and I could come right to work that summer and learn the planetarium equipment, because I told him I'd never run a planetarium. So and it was, what a great job that was for the summer. It's one of my favorite summers. I spent 5 days a week in the planetarium studying, trying things out with the all the equipment, and he gave me permission to make any changes I wanted to the physical location. So I wound up spending some of their money and fixing up some things, which was, you know, something that pleased him. So that's my interview story. And if it hadn't been for the phone call from my friend, he may have all of a sudden been disappointed. This guy has never answered me. But it worked out, and I spent the next 6 years at that school and loved it there.
That's a great story, and it's such a good story for young people who are impatient and worried and anxious and hate job interviews, and how easy it is to have things turn out really well, right, if you're yourself.
And the real problem with the waiting was there was a date by which I had to let the county know that I was going to leave, because in the public school system, at least the one I was in, if you do not let them know at the appropriate time, you can never come back. And I had a good friend of mine who did that. He waited too long, took another job outside of education. It was a disaster. A year later, he tried to come back. He was an excellent teacher. He had a great reputation. But the county policy was, if you don't follow our rules, we don't want you. So anyway, I believe I was 1 or 2 days away from that deadline when I finally got all the information.
Why didn't you call him?
Oh, my goodness. I would never call somebody I interviewed for a job. And but that's like begging.
Even with a deadline?
Yeah.
Wow.
No, I don't know now. Of course, I'm much older now. But it was almost all my decisions like that in my life have been based on the same kind of situation as if I ask a girl out. You know, one refusal and I'm done, or one sign of no interest and I'm gone. And I think that was something in my education from my family, that you do not, you ask one time and that's it. So since then, I think I have probably mellowed on that, but I can hear your smile when I say I mellowed on that.
So, you've mellowed in a lot of ways, I gather.
Yeah, I hope I have. So anyway, I think your remarks about interviews are absolutely great. And I think we should get I'm going to get ready for my guest.
Okay.
Will be coming.
Are you keeping time? Because I'm not.
I think we're 20 minutes into the show.
We are. I think we're 21 or so minutes into the show, but I'm not sure. Okay.
Okay.
I will go with you.
Yes. And so actually we have about 36 minutes to go. All right.
Okay.
Okay. So,
all right. So, I'm going to go find our guest.
Right.
Wandering around my house someplace.
Right. And I'm going to mention a few things about storytelling.
Okay. Sounds good. I will see you shortly.
Unless you want me to sing a song.
That'd be fine.
I'm right. All right. Well, listeners of our radio program here, in just a couple of minutes or less, we will have our guest for the day, Mr. T.H. Barnes, who is a person of some age and has led a fascinating life. And I have gotten some questions to ask Mr. Barnes. And as soon as he appears in the studio here, we'll get on with this interview. So I don't think it should be too much longer. Well, there is someone at the door. And here we are. Mr. Barnes?
Yes, sir.
Ah, Mr. Barnes.
I'm here. The girl came and got me.
I'm so happy that you have joined us for this interview, and I hope you will be patient with me. I don't interview many people, especially I do not often interview people who have so much experience.
Well, it is an honor. I've been hearing about your radio show. That's my my great granddaughter who invited me to come and sit with you and answer a few questions.
Yes.
And she is very excited about this radio program, as she should be, indeed. You know, I do love the radio. I spend a lot of my time these days sitting in my chair by the radio. And sometimes I have a grandchild or a neighbor with me. You know, not everybody on our block has their own radio. So sometimes people stop by. And I have even listened to one or two of your past programs. My great-granddaughter has exposed me to this new world.
Good. Well, that's good. So I'm going to jump right in and ask if you would tell our listening audience a little bit about yourself. I do have some questions, but my first thing is about your work. What have you done as a career or a profession in your lifetime?
Well, certainly that's a reasonable question, especially for an interview. Well, I have spent my adult life as a barber. I was trained as a barber in a little town in upstate Pennsylvania, just across the state line from Binghamton, if you know where Binghamton, New York is, Susquehanna Junction, sometimes just called Susquehanna. And I was just, I believe I was 18 or 19 years old I must have been 17, I think, when I started my training there. I had thought I was going to go to Oberlin College to continue my education there. But the more I thought about it, the less I wanted to go all the way across the country like that. I had been raised in New York and spent 6 years or so of my youth in New York City at the New York Colored Orphans Asylum. And when it came time for me to move on, they told me there at the institution that my examinations and my studies put me in the category where I was eligible for a scholarship to Oberlin College, and they were offering scholarships at that time. But, it's a long story. I had been sick with typhoid fever, and I wanted to stay with my younger brother, Peter. Our parents had died, which is why we were in the orphanage in the first place. But my uncle Peter was in favor of my going to Oberlin, but I wanted to stay closer to home, and I ended up being apprenticed as a barber instead. And I never regretted that decision. I've had a fine life. I have a fine family. My children have been educated and married off well. Now we have 16 or 17, I forget which, grandchildren, and now they're the great grands coming along, and I cannot keep track of all these people, not even remember all of their names. But I have been a barber through all of that time, and that has taken me to meet some fine citizens, men and women, and allowed me to serve on various community committees and organizations, so I've been able to travel a bit, and it's been a good life. Is that what you wanted to know, sir? Well, I still consider myself married. My wife, Mary Bell, died some years ago, but I will not marry again. She was my wife, and that's the only wife I intend to have now that I'm 92 years old. I still considered myself married. I'm still in the house that we shared. So she's still with me, keeping an eye on me. I know that for sure, because sometimes she speaks to me and when I least expect it. So I know that I am still married, yes.
Right. Well, that is admirable. So many people nowadays, when they find themselves unmarried for whatever reason, make some foolish choices. But how many years were you married before your wife passed?
Well, we married in 1873 when I was just 21 years old. No, wait, that's when we met. So you can subtract 2 years from that.
All right.
So let's see. More, oh my. So we did have our 50th golden wedding anniversary.
Oh,
and
my
it
God.
Was another, oh, 10, 15 years after that she left us.
My goodness. Well, I can certainly appreciate not getting married again. 65 years or so with the same woman. I'm sure she's still there.
Oh, yes. Yes.
So I do have a question about a period in your life that I have wondered about since I did a little bit of research about you. Theodore Roosevelt, the President of the United States in the early part of the 20th century.
Oh, yes, I do remember that previous Mr. Roosevelt.
Okay, well, Teddy, as he was known, did an amazing thing shortly after he took office in 1901. He assumed the office because the previous president had been assassinated. And he
McKinley.
He did something that it was quite provocative at the time, and that was inviting Booker T. Washington to the White House to dinner.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I wondered if you remember that time, and if what I've read about that occasion ever impacted you in the way things happened at that time. What I read was that people were furious with the president because, of course, people of African-American heritage had built the White House. Some mm-hmm. people worked in the White House and even went to occasions in the White House. But no person of color had ever been invited to dinner at the White House.
Mm-hmm.
And at the time, what I've read about that was it was a phenomenal thing and caused Mr. Roosevelt to be chastised by a number of groups and individuals.
Yes. Well, I had been following Mr. Roosevelt for some time because, of course, he was the governor of New York State before he became president. And yeah. He happened to be invited and did attend the dedication of the Frederick Douglass Memorial in 1898, when that was erected and then dedicated in Douglass's memory. And I am one of the greatest achievements of my life that I'm proud of is that I was on that monument committee. And so I was, of course, present when the monument was dedicated, and I did hear Roosevelt speak. I was not able to shake the man's hand. There was this huge crowd around him, and he was kind of whisked away pretty quickly. But right. But I was there, and he certainly had an interesting career even up to that point before he became president. So I have followed his life fairly closely. Now, Booker T. Washington, of course, was well known to me, as a man who spent his life in the pursuit of uplift of the Negro race. And he did some fine things for our people. There has been controversy, of course. You hear more about it these days in books, and it's written about more. Back in those times, it was mostly in the Negro press or in discussions around the fireplace, the dinner table. Booker T. Washington pursued a course and a philosophy of supporting Black businesses, Negro businesses, and building up the community. And he thought that education should be focused on making a living and becoming skilled at your trade. He was not necessarily in favor of higher education for Negroes. He thought our resources would be better placed building an economic fraternity and supporting the uplift of individuals by making sure they had lucrative trades and supporting each other, that kind of camaraderie and community. And as someone who had the choice to go to college and decided not to, I certainly understand his point of view. I have never regretted that I did not get a university education. But I do think that there are many fine minds and intellects in the Negro community. And for people who want to pursue higher education and are satisfied to spend their days in a book, sitting at a desk or in conversation with academics, that right must be pursued and bestowed upon those people who are willing to live that lifestyle.
Right.
So Booker T. Washington was on the cusp or in the middle of that controversy. To have the President of the United States invite a Negro to dinner was a red letter day. And I do not think there's anyone in the Negro community who would have thought it was wrong of Booker T. to visit the White House or to have dinner with the president. And I don't think anyone would fault Roosevelt for the invitation. That does not mean you have to agree with all the politics of either one of those individuals. But I well remember that time. It was written up frequently, both before, during, and after, both in the Negro press and in the establishment press. So that's interesting. You should bring that up.
Yes, well, Roosevelt was a great president in lots of ways, and he did do a number of things. For instance, starting the program of national parks and places like that. In my mind, I give him credit for doing something that was unique in the sense of inviting a Negro person to the White House, and especially dinner. That I'm sure in some circles, especially politically, Roosevelt heard about that. But let's move on to something else. In your time, I wonder if you could comment on the safety. I'm not sure exactly the correct way to ask this, but things have always been difficult for the Negro population. Of course, the Civil War, and then afterwards. And even today, people are still controversial about different movements in any situation. But how were you affected in your life by the different kinds of treatment that the Negro population received in this country? I know that was a rambling question. I'm sorry for that. But,
well, I'm familiar and sympathetic to rambling. I have no problem with rambling. And I was told by my great-granddaughter that I could call you Mr. Z.
Yes.
Or Mr. Stash, if I preferred.
Yes.
Mr. Z being a little more formal, I think I will use that. But I did want you to know that I practiced the pronunciation of your name. I am very interested in names and where they come from. And of course, having studied my own family history and researched some of it, I want to honor everybody's name. So I want you to know that I do know how to pronounce Zielkowski. But I will refer to you as Mr. Z so as not to distract myself from the story.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. That shows a great deal of respect that you would take the time to learn how to pronounce my name.
Well, they say,
many,
you know,
people who don't.
they say that the more you stretch your brain, the more it will last. I'm trying to practice.
I believe that. Since you didn't go to college, I am sure, just from hearing you speak and your manner, that you are educated. So you must be a reader.
Oh yes. Well, that ties into your last question about safety and security for colored people. Part of taking care of a family or thinking about the safety of one's community is about being prepared, being aware of what other people in the community are thinking about, worried about, what your neighbors fear, and trying to stay one step ahead of those fears, whether they be rational or irrational. So I do appreciate the question on the safety and security of the colored community, the Negro community. I did finish high school at the New York Colored Orphans Asylum, and it was a rigorous curriculum. We studied the arts, we studied languages, mathematics, and science, as well as trades. Now, I did not begin my official apprenticeship until I left the institution and went to study barbering with Mr. Samuel T. Johnston in Susquehanna, Pennsylvania. But we did have a shoe shop and a wood shop, and girls were trained in various domestic arts. We had several fine seamstresses, and so when I left the institution, I did not stop reading. I find one of the difficulties with our general citizen population is that people don't keep up reading once they finish their official schooling. And I have always been interested in reading. I learned to read before I went to the institution. I went to a small, really pitiful one-room schoolhouse in outside Lewistown, Pennsylvania, where I was born. But so I would read the newspaper to my mother on a daily basis because she did not read well, but it was important to her that I read well. And the reading instruction I received at the small school that I attended there in Lewistown was not adequate in her mind. And so she would drill me. And even though she did not know all the words, she would insist that I read every day. So when I left New York City, I did keep reading. And Samuel T. Johnston, my master barber, who trained me, he had a house full of books and was happy to lend them to me. And I just kept reading ever after. I have tried to continue that tradition in my own home with my children and grandchildren, and now the great-grands coming along. So yes, sir, I do consider myself partly self-educated on contemporary issues, but I had a fine grounding from that New York Colored Orphans Asylum. But on the subject of safety and security for the colored community, it is about vigilance. It's about being aware of what's going on, reading the papers and discussion, especially people who travel. If you're not able to travel yourself, whether you are a white person or a colored person, it's important that you talk to people who do travel, because what is going on in your community might be weeks or months behind what is going on in other places. And if you're hearing the news from all over the country and all over the world, that gives you a much better chance of being prepared for the unexpected. I think I'll stop now.
Well, that was that was wonderful. That answered my question. And reminded me of a point that often people stop when they leave school. They do away with book learning, and sometimes that doesn't help our citizens. You know, since the country is better off with an educated populace, and it, just because you didn't go to college doesn't mean you can't keep up with what's going on in the world and what's going on in the country, especially.
We are like minds, sir.
Good. I have a question that, can you tell me, and I'm glad we didn't prepare you for this, of a standout time in your life, a standout either moment or some occasion that has stayed with you that was important in your life. That, you know, and it doesn't even have to be, like meeting the president or going to college, but something that stands out to you when you think about your life, a moment in time when you would say, oh, that's a good memory. I put you on the spot.
No. Now that I am far up in years, it is easier for me to put things in perspective. And of course, I have a lot of memories, so there are many for me to choose from. But one of the things that I call them golden memories, things that make me confident that I've had a good life, better than many, more opportunities than many, and more joy and pleasure in my life than I know many people are able to experience for various reasons. So I told you that Mary Bell and I married in 1873, and when we had our 25th wedding anniversary in 1898, would that have been? I've never been a man to keep numbers in my head. My mother was a fine mathematician, though she did not read well, and she did try to talk to me about numbers on a daily basis, but
well, you did fine with that. 1998 right. So, would have been 25.
1898, yes, our 25th wedding anniversary, and that was a particularly golden time. But then we had our 50th wedding anniversary, and that was even more spectacular in my mind, partly because of the number of guests who attended, the number of grandchildren who attended, and the fact that it was written up in the local press was particularly gratifying to me. You know, in my small town of Olean, New York, I am T.H. Thomas Henry Barnes to my family, which I think they see as a term of respect. And since I usually sign my name, T.H. Barnes, they just kept that up and tend to say it as an honorific. But many of the townspeople still call me Tommy. So the idea that I was written up in the local press as T.H. Barnes and his wife, Mary Bell Peoples Lot Barnes, was very gratifying to me. And being toasted and honored on that evening, side by side with my wife and our three children and their children, meant a lot to me. There were almost, if I remember correctly, there were more than 300 people there. So it did take some saving and some scrimping to be able to put on a banquet like that. And of course, we had help from our children to do that. But it was something to sit at the head of the table and have some prominent citizens of the town attend and be interviewed by a newspaper man. It made me feel quite appreciated.
Well, and well deserved. To be married 50 years. Lots of people have a hard time even keeping friends for 50 years, let alone a husband or a wife. So that is something. I do have a question about a difficult subject, I think. And that is about the race relations. Have you seen any improvement in race relations in your lifetime? Certainly, early on, you would not have been pleased with the way the country was going with the Civil War, slavery, and Reconstruction, and that. But as you passed midlife, say, has there been an improvement in the lot of the Negro people?
Well, one of the benefits of being old, as well as one of the dangers of being old, is the history that you recall. And to have all those memories from all those many years, both good memories and bad ones, it does help to put in perspective some of the good and bad that you see around you right now, that I see around me right now. So in some ways, I think I have become slightly more careful. Some people might say cynical, but I don't feel cynical. I do still feel hopeful about not just the colored race, but about human beings as a whole being able to treat each other with some kindness. You know, one of the things I inherited from my father died when I was but 8 years old, but what he taught me, if there were two most important things that he taught me, it was to be kind and to know myself. It was important to me that important to him that I reflect upon my life on a daily basis and that I struggle with the urge to put self before community. And I think his way of saying that was be kind. People have certainly been kind. They have been generous over and over again when I needed help, when I feared for my life, when I feared for my ability to care for myself and my brother, Peter. My mother died just 2 years later after my father, and her last words to me were to care for my brother, Peter, and to be a good boy, follow the Bible as she taught me. But her unspoken lessons were about community. They were about finding my place in the world and paying attention to the people around me, to see the people around me as teachers and role models. And that reading of the paper that I did with her every day, that was part of knowing my community and knowing my own place in it, what was possible for me, not to limit me, but to see opportunity when it approached. And there have certainly been instances of trauma, is a word that I hear lately out in the world, you know, lots being written about the trauma of people overseas suffering from tyranny and fear. And we've had trauma of our own here in this country for hundreds of years without it being recognized or spoken of adequately. But just having the law changed, having colored people recognized as human beings and citizens, it is a very big advance. It's one of those beacons of progress. So if your question to me is, are things getting better for the Negro race? I would say overall, yes, but there is still so far to go. And as an old man, it is sometimes difficult to maintain a positive attitude. There are some of our great colored leaders who speak of their despair as they reach an elderly place in their lifetimes. And I understand that well. But the short answer to the question is, yes, as long as you recognize how far we have to go.
Well, thank you so much for that. It was so well expressed. I can only imagine the difficulties that members of the Negro race have difficulties is not the correct word. I can only imagine some of the difficulties that the Negro people have had to go through because of their skin color, which seems irrational to me in this day and age, but looking through history, I also look at history, and looking through history, it seems like that is a failure in the human being, that people who are different for some reason or another, the one group or another will find fault with that person or that group of people because of some small difference. The way they look, the way they act, the language they speak. And I myself remember as a young child hearing about people of my personal background. My grandparents were from Poland. And when I was a young boy, there was an expression about DP, which is the two words, two letters. And actually that came about by being used for a person who was a displaced person. But in my neighborhood, people used that to disparage Polish people. They called that, some people would use it and say that you were a dumb Polak. And that was terrible. To hear, and I'm glad to see that stuff like that has pretty much disappeared from the language, but it in no way compares to how the people of the Negro race were treated, and still are.
I've heard that phrase, not the letters used, but that phrase used even in Olean. So this kind of horror goes on all over, I think.
Yes. And if there is something you would like to share with our radio audience, is there something that you would like to share? That what question should I have asked you?
Well, I just want to say to anybody who is listening at the moment that this new conflagration, this war that the United States has just entered into in 1942, when we're speaking of it today, is just another vicissitude that we will come out of. And I hope that people do not give up hope, that you that we can put our hearts into this as a people, and that the shared experience of battling this new threat will make us stronger as a community of all backgrounds, and that we come out on the other side stronger and more aware of the world around us. So blessings on anybody listening, and even those that are not. I have enjoyed my time with you, Mr. Z. Thank you for the invitation.
I appreciate your words, especially that last reflection. That I would like to hear that come from the mouths of some of our leaders, both here in the United States and throughout the world. I think our time is about up.
Thank you, sir. Thank you.
You're very welcome. I appreciate you taking the time to come to us. And I'm going to close our show now. You've been listening to the enlightenedradio.org. Coming to you from Bolivar, West Virginia. And today we were thrilled to have T.H. Barnes come and answer some questions for us. And perhaps we'll have Mr. Barnes back another time, because he certainly has lots of wisdom that he can share with us based on his many years of being a barber and being a married person and raising so many children. Thank you, Mr. Barnes. And you can, audience, you can hear this interview at talltales.enlightenedradio.org. And there are many other tales at that position. So this is Stosh Zielkowski. And
Fanny Crawford.
Signing off. Take care, and we'll see you, and you can hear us next week.
I'm sending John. Hi, John.
Hello there, everybody.
John, there was a...
Let me turn off the tape here.
John, there was a point in the show where we lost connection.
Oh, really?
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I kept hearing you the whole time.
Was that really from Stosh? Yeah, well, it was from Stosh. I lost connection. I could not hear Stosh for more than a minute.
Oh, right. Okay.
Well, I was trying.